Hello, Ariana here, host of the Cold Coffee Coven podcast, which is a space of authentic sharing from the heart and through all things mamahood with a divine witchy twist. I speak on juicy topics and join in conversation with other creatively amazing yet magically ordinary mamas who speak on their own enchanted experiences, expertise, and expansion. So rewarm your coffee, get comfy, and I hope you enjoy. Friends, welcome to episode 2. So today I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down and chatting with my friend Heather, who I've known through Instagram now for 8 years, and she's always been such a light and a source of inspiration. It felt so sweet and special to witness Heather reflect on her many years of homeschooling her now grown children. And I think no matter where you may be in your own homeschooling journey, or even just exploring curiosity around homeschooling, I think you as well will walk away with her little nuggets of wisdom. Along with being a mama to 4, Heather is also a grandmother. She's a yoga teacher, a herbalist, a full-spectrum trauma-informed birth worker, a holistic health consultant and wellness specialist. You can find Heather's offerings and work at timeforbaby.com, and that's timeforbaby.com. And her Instagram handle is the same, as well as her more personal, fun Instagram, which is at greensandtea. Heather and I actually ended up chatting for nearly 2 hours. So to shorten it a little bit, I actually just jumped right into the conversation and kind of edited the chit chat in the beginning between us. And yeah, so a little bit of a funky start, but that's all right. Thank you so, so much for dropping in with us. I appreciate you all. Enjoy.
My goal with the kids was to help them discover their passion. What's their dharma? What are they meant to go into the world and share with the world? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of my primary purpose with the kids. And so letting them follow their interests. And so if my oldest is a phenomenal writer, and so instead of multiple choice exams and things like that, she would write beautiful stories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they were fantasy stories, sometimes they were very literal historical stories, but it was always a writing assignment for her. And you know, my youngest one has autism, and so he had a lot of developmental issues that he had to overcome, and that was a priority. So there were so many different aspects of parenting that came before teaching. Mm-hmm. and education filled in, and then letting them discover who they were helped me design their curriculums for high school, so that then when they were done with high school, they would be set for whatever they wanted to do beyond that. And so my oldest knew she wanted to go to university, so we made sure that all of the boxes were checked, you know, the math, the requirements were fulfilled, foreign language, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We made sure all of that was checked for her, and then she got scholarships and graduated with honors from the university, and now she, you know, does phenomenal marketing, and you know, everything is very creative. She runs the youth ministry at her church. She does all the marketing for the church. She worked for several different nonprofits doing marketing, and so all of infusing that writing, plus of course she always writes. My oldest son wanted to either be police officer or a fireman or a military, or in all honesty, he wanted to be a samurai or a knight, or, you know, like he, and so we made sure all his boxes were checked, and he was able to enlist in the Marine Corps. And so, you know, homeschool, no, we followed no specific standard of curriculum, and he was able to enlist in the Marine Corps. And then Cole did was, you know, just brilliant, artistic, everything, and now is at University of Cincinnati majoring in psychology.
Love
And, you
that.
know, and then my youngest is, he's doing full-time computer programming at the local community college, and he'll graduate in the spring. So
That
like
is
they
so beautiful.
very different, but yes, it
Yeah,
was.
I love that. And that's actually been my favorite part of homeschooling, is being able to really support and nurture and encourage those interests and being open to them changing because they do.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really also appreciate that you mentioned that even though you homeschool from start to finish with four children, you still experience these waves of doubt and questioning yourself and your enoughness, because definitely through the question box and through my own experience and friends that are homeschooling, it feels like there isn't a mother who escapes those little pockets and moments of like, am I doing enough? Am I enough? Am I failing them? I feel like we all kind of go through that a little bit. So I know that will be appreciated by the mothers listening. So you kind of touched on a little bit that you weaved in the Waldorf philosophies. Is there any others that would you consider yourself eclectic when you approach to your
Definitely,
homeschooling? Yeah, sounds
definitely eclectic. And you know, Charlotte Mason,
good.
lo
So
be
lots of
because of my love
literature.
of literature,
Yeah.
Ambleside Online was a great resource because it was free and it was just so much information for that Charlotte Mason-based homeschooling. And then my oldest was super focused on her faith, and so I wove in as much of the faith-based material as she wanted. And so I really let the kids feel what they wanted and fused that into their curriculum
Yeah.
and let them kind of discover for themselves. I mean, obviously we introduced things to them through, and you know, so they weren't just kind of out there going, hey, this is interesting. I would introduce things again. I have such a deep passion for literature, so I was constantly exposing them to literature. Also meditation and our circle time. We would have a circle time in the morning, and even when the older kids were older, they still would join us for circle time, which is again an element from the Waldorf approach of just that kind of like the sky above, the earth below, and here in the center am I, and that hand and heart and head connection, and being able to really just come together in the morning, and we would meditate and set our intentions for the day. And my oldest son, my favorite is he didn't like to meditate at first, and so I didn't force him by any means, but he was a huge Star Wars fan, and so he didn't meditate, he did Jedi training. And so you know,
That's good stuff.
while I let them do what they wanted to do and kind of, you know, infuse their passions and everything into it, I also was directing things.
Right.
And you
And
know, I
yeah,
was
offering
definitely, but I
guidance
was,
and
yes. So I, you know, there wasn't a free for all. We were very organized and very, very not structured, but we definitely had, I had my mission that I wanted to do. And really the most difficult part was hearing, being able to not absorb those external commentary, you know, from friends and family who just didn't, especially in the early years, who just didn't understand, how can you homeschool them? Why would you do this? You know, what about their friends? What about
Yes, the
their
social,
socializing? And you know, my biggest argument for that, and Cole uses this all the time because Cole has friends of all different age ranges. Only in school are they ever placed in a, you are seven, you will be with 7-year-olds. You are 10, you will be with 10-year-olds. Throughout life, once they're adults, they're
All
with
age.
a wide range. So my kids from early on, they were taught to be kind and compassionate towards everyone,
right.
Show respect to everyone, you know, ahimsa, we do no harm. But it's that being able to be your own person and share that with someone regardless of their age.
Yeah, and I feel like it stretches that relatability. They're not just relating or connecting with that one age group. And I feel that is it. That's the Montessori kind of foundation,
yep.
right? In that mixed age mm-hmm. groups. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really cool. The Montessori, there are three ages. And so there's always someone learning. There's always someone kind of in the middle, and there's always someone teaching. And so, you know, you're constantly changing those roles. Mm-hmm. So you're, and so I like that as well. And we infused a lot of Montessori elements into our schooling as well. I really like manipulatives.
Yeah.
Especially with my youngest, he was very sensitive. So Montessori, phenomenal manipulatives.
I feel like a lot of parents too are weaving these philosophies and methods into their everyday or into their schooling without even realizing that it's like, without even labeling it as, oh, this is Montessori and this is Waldorf,
yes.
and this is classical, yes. or this is unschooling. So mm-hmm. I think, again, it's that labeling. If we just take that all away and focus on what's working for the family,
right,
it kind of takes away a lot of that external pressure that you're speaking to.
Right.
Sure. Well,
and when we remove those labels too, instead of saying, I homeschool Montessori.
Right.
We get that mentality of, okay, well, if I'm doing Montessori homeschooling, I have to do everything.
Right.
Everything
and you have
do.
To do it right. Or
yeah.
And it invites so much more judgment, whether it's external judgment or internal or wherever it's coming from. I noticed that myself mm-hmm. when I was very beginning. Mm-hmm. Do you want to jump into some questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
We got a lot.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just going to popcorn around.
Okay.
How has it worked out for your kids to merge from homeschool into internships, etc.? Do you encourage them to get a GED or to get a job at a certain age? This is a huge misconception, and I had no idea. People really thought, like, if you homeschool, there's this wall or limitation on what they can do after homeschool. Like, I mean, my daughter started college at ASU at 17 years old for conservation biology and ecology. Like, she's mm-hmm. the one who excels that I was speaking to. We had no issues at all. It's a yep. extra piece of paper that we had to sign. I mean, piece of
yep.
cake. So, and you,
yep.
said, you spoke to this as well.
Yep. All of the kids, I mean, for goodness sake, my son got into the military, and it was a homeschool transcript. There was nothing official or anything. He met all the criteria. He did really well on the ASVAB test that he had to take for entry. And I mean, it really was not an issue. For college, my oldest went to a private university, so that was not an issue at all. And then Cole and Matthias went to community college first, and that was absolutely no issue. Then
mm-hmm.
Cole did the same thing, started at community college early, because it was not a problem. He just,
right.
We were living in Arizona at the time. There were a couple of classes that Cole wanted to take. And so, okay, let's go see. Completely just ask. I mean, that's kind
right.
of what we discovered over the years was, it's not going to hurt if you're qualified to do something. And the same with jobs and
mm-hmm.
internships, for that matter, with the kids growing up. Just apply.
Yeah.
What if you meet the criteria for what they're looking for,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, we figure out how we need to provide whatever reassurances they need
mm-hmm.
afterwards. But go do the interview. I know Cole applied for a job at a restaurant at 13, and they, oh my gosh, they were like, yes, we want to hire you immediately, but then found out 13 is a little too young.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I encouraged the interviewing process. I always, because that was great experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So no, the kids have not had any issue with getting into, and it's been all different things. So, and then Cole graduated at the community college with an associate's degree, and then transferred without any problems whatsoever.
Yeah, it
up to university, and that was not a problem at
yeah,
all.
It was really, really easy. No issues at all. Okay, let's get to this one, because this is another one that was touched on between us, and it's one that is asked no matter what circle you're in, or if you're for homeschooling or not, the socialization. How to keep kiddos socialized with peers. This has actually, I know it's not impossible, and I know that it should not be something that holds you back from homeschooling, but it has been challenging. It's just, for us, it's something that takes effort. And I don't know if that's where some other families find the challenge as well, is they're waiting for it to come and just be around and open, because we're so used to that in a public school setting, is that the socialization and the friends, and they meet the kids that are in the same neighborhood. With homeschooling, where we are, it was not so much in Texas, it was a little easier for us, but here in Alabama, we have to put in the effort. We have to try. We have to go out and look for it. How was your experience with the socialization?
I agree. You definitely have to look for it. With each move, first thing we did was we would go to the library and get a library card and find out story times, whatever kind of activities they had at the library. So that was great when they were little.
Yeah, I do feel younger. It's easier when they're younger.
So much easier when they're younger. One, because there are lots of opportunities, but also my experience was that kids are more welcoming when they're younger than they are when they're older. Sports, huge.
Yeah, that's
sports
been
were huge.
Big driver for us.
Lots different youth groups, community youth groups, church youth groups, volunteering. That was a really big thing too. Getting into the community and volunteering. And again, sometimes the kids were friends with kids who were slightly older, kids who were slightly younger, because they would meet during volunteer opportunities. And so they didn't always have exact age friends for that in that regard. But yeah, I would say we did pretty well. My kids are very happy to have one another. You know, when they were growing up, they were very happy to have one another. And so there were four of them. So we did have that benefit.
Right.
My oldest is super gifted musically. And so she played guitar. And so we would get her involved in music lessons and things like that. So a lot of outside, definitely a lot of legwork. It never came to us.
Right.
We definitely worked to find it and seek out. And so a lot of that came to what are their interests and what's in the community that they can attend. Never taking anything off the table, like never saying, well, what's available for 8-year-old girls?
Yeah.
You know, instead of just like going to the kids and saying, what do you want to do? You know, what activities we would start our school year. We would do that. We schooled year round most of the time, because we would have family come and visit for long lengths of the time and different things. But we would always have a starting point. And so we would talk about what goals do you want to achieve? What activities do you want to do? What are some, what is kind of your mission for the year? And so based on those activities that the kids would come up with, then we looked into the community. Well, how can we get you involved
socialization,
in things? And like I've said a couple of times, it was never just what child activities are there. It was just in general, what is in the community that can feed this? And so if one of them enjoyed doing something that there wasn't a specific activity for, well, what are some things that can feed into the skills that need to be fostered for that activity? So, again, it's a lot of just kind of creative thought and brainstorming with the kids.
Do you have any wisdom around teaching to read? Because I know mine's been all over the place.
I love reading, and I thought that this would be super easy. My oldest fell in love with reading right away, and it was super easy. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm a brilliant teacher. This is so easy. And then my second had dyslexia. And so it was, okay, well, this is not as easy. And then the third was reading before the second was. And then, you know, the four, so it was a battle. So I will say that I approached it differently with each child because they were different kids. For the two who struggled with that initial early understanding of reading, we used, oh gosh, it was 100 days to read. I can't think
of it. So like 100 lessons.
Yes, I can't think of it now. I just
can put it in the notes because we have yes. that one too.
We did a lot of, so again, Waldorf Oak Meadow had such a great program that I did with all of the kids. And that was you learning the letters first and the shapes of the letters and the sounds and learning them through stories. And so you had fairy tales that that were everything was, every letter had a fairy tale. And I loved that. Oh my gosh, I loved that so much. And so
that with Waldorf too.
So much drawing and then we would do walks where we would find things. We did a lot of walks where we would find things that started with whatever letter we were working on. We would make bread in the shapes of the letters.
Yeah.
We were, you know, very, very kinesthetic. And so all of the different, you know, they would lay down in the shapes of the letter. Everything was, and that helped tremendously for all of them. And you know, even my oldest, for whom reading came so easily, she enjoyed all of these activities. You know, she loved just the fun of them. And so the rhyming, we did lots of the kind of tongue twister rhyming, all of those kind of, I cannot speak highly enough about the Waldorf approach, specifically, really just nature, finding letters in nature, using sticks to make the shapes, going to the beach and drawing things, you know, using shells, like really as much tactical kind of,
that's what I've noticed, the hands-on,
you know, absolutely. That was the most that was the best way for the kids to learn their letters, the sounds, and then blending them, and then using there was a book, it was of course, like the Frog and Toad books and the Little Bear books, like all of those sweet stories. We loved those. Those were kind of our early readers, and it's just exposure to reading, reading to them, reading to the kids.
I think that's reading
day.
To them. I think it's overlooked on how.
Oh my gosh!
With some of mine, I felt like there was just this light bulb switch moment for them through reading to them versus the child reading to me. That just switches on. How to respond to haters? How do you deal with a child who wants to public school, but for you, it feels a no? Did you have any experience with any of your children wanting to try public school?
My oldest son wanted to go to high school because he wanted to play sports on the high school team. And so we enrolled him and we did, you know, the whole process, and it didn't feel right for me, but I was working really hard to separate my
right
heart, you know, really like differentiate, is this me saying no, or is this really and truly like a this shouldn't happen feeling? He ended up having some health issues, and he wasn't, that would not enable him to play on the sports team, and so that was the only reason he wanted to go. And so it kind of worked itself out after that, and we just moved on from there. But he was the only one who ever expressed an interest, and that was strictly because he wanted to play the sports. And so he was able to play the sports in town, travel teams and things like that. He was a baseball player. That was the only one who ever really expressed an interest in wanting to go to school.
Yeah. When we first moved here, actually, Rowan thought she wanted to go back. And then as we started the enrolling process, it quickly shifted for her, like going into the school and how they spoke to her and just the loops we were having to jump through. She was like, no. And then I don't know if you remember me sharing, but there was this whole piece of paper that I had to give permission or decline paddling.
Like, oh my gosh, yes.
I just was like, and in to defend Alabama a little bit because it has such a bad rep, but Alabama is not the only state that paddling is still legal. You just don't have to sign a form. Like in Texas, it's legal. I never had to sign a form, but it just it just didn't feel good for any of us. So she ended up choosing not to go. But last year, Ava had started to talk about it. And we just explored and had an open conversation on why she wanted to go to school. And kind of in the untangling of that, it was just she missed like the social aspects of it. So that just gave us an okay, well, we need to put more effort into meeting that craving that she was having.
Right.
And then it very quickly went away after we were able to meet what she was kind of felt was lacking or that she was craving. So other than that, there's been no desire.
I think you hit the nail on the head too when it comes to communication. Foster from day one, just fostering that communication with the kids, ensuring that the kids know that you are a safe place for them to come to and have an open conversation with, and that they can, that you love them and they can share their emotions with you, that they feel that safety, that ability to be able to be vulnerable with you and say, this is something that I really would like to talk to you about. And so I think that is the game changer, honestly, to be able to have that open communication with the kids.
As far as the haters, part of that question, the only hate that I've received is from either complete strangers, so I could care less, or from extended family that have never met my children, so again, I could care less. So I don't have much experience around having to navigate people who are judging my choices, because it hasn't been coming from anybody that really matters. Right. Like the opinion makes no difference to me.
We definitely experienced haters. I shouldn't say haters, questioners. like I said, we had family come and visit frequently. And so I felt that, and a lot of it was my own insecurity of feeling like I have to show that my kids are doing well.
Yeah.
So they're I own that, but they're, it was there for a reason. You know, there people would come and visit and would say things like, oh, why aren't they doing this yet? Oh, they're still not doing that. Or, you know, my parents were great because my dad was an elementary school teacher for 1,000 years. And so when they would visit, they were like, what can we do? How can we interact with the kids? And so that was always beautiful, but not everybody was quite so enthusiastic to jump in. And because we would school year round, there were always different things that we were doing. So people would come to visit, you know, especially when we lived in places like Hawaii, everybody wanted to visit us then, and they would come for extended times. And so, you know, we have company, and it's hard, especially when the kids are little and you're trying to maintain that continuity of learning their letters and things like that. So that was it. We tried to make that not be as disruptive as it was, but those were the times when I felt like I had to put them on display. This is what we are doing. This is how. And so eventually I worked through it and was able to just recognize that it was creating a negative effect on my kids when this was happening. And it was my own Because they were very aware,
mm-hmm.
because of our, you know, I have a good relationship with the kids, and so they could sense my discomfort. And so my recognizing that, okay, well, I need to be more positive about this.
Yeah.
And so just a lot of self-awareness, on my part.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm really taking and loving about listening to you reflect on your homeschooling experience with your kids, is that responsibility that you take for those moments or kind of waves of that self-doubt, or that just the growth as mama and woman that you went through, because it is an opportunity of such healing, but healing sometimes doesn't feel good, and it kind of peels
right.
back from really layers that when you're looking at yourself. But I really respect that in your sharing today. Okay, where to start? I just pulled my 8-year-old son out and I'm overwhelmed with all the ideas. Yeah, it was just from the first time that I started when my oldest was in fourth grade to now, the resources and inspiration is incredible, but it's also like, wow, like I can see it, like overwhelming.
Oh my gosh. Well, I, as I said, when I started with my oldest, there was nothing, there was no internet. And I thought that was difficult because I was having to do things on my own. But then with my youngest, everything was internet. There was so much that that was worse. That was so much harder
because the comparison sneaks in so much more easy.
Yes.
And
there was
the outside standards and
there was no social media perfect image of what the homeschool classrooms looked like and things
and
like
think that is in so many areas of our motherhood, not just with homeschool, but I see it in pregnancy and birth and in our you know, homekeeping and in every aspect of mothering. It's there's this fine line between inspiration and then just opening the gate for comparison.
Right. Oh my gosh, yeah. In that sense, it was so much easier when it was just, you know, but that's not to say that having other people as inspiration isn't incredibly helpful.
Definitely.
It's just, it like you said, it all comes down to being able to recognize your own personal strength and your own personal healing, and being able to say, I can look and see, oh my gosh, this mama is doing this amazing project. I really want to incorporate something like that with my family, and not feel that it has to be the exact, but be in, so being inspired instead of being like, oh my gosh, she's doing this, I have to do this. And you know, it's such a different, you know, it's a different chakra that we feel that in, and it's such a different, it comes from such a different place. And so checking when we're feeling that pressure to do something, checking where that's coming from. Is that coming from my own personal insecurities? Is that coming from a place of healing that I still need to do? Or is that coming from, oh my gosh, I'm so inspired, I want to run with this, I want to take this and make this my own, you know, instead of it, like we said earlier, with doing the specific things, Montessori, A, B, C, D, I have to do all the, it's the same thing with these influencers. So being able to take each of those things and be inspired by them and be able to lead with your heart and trust that that's what's going to provide what your child needs.
What would you suggest from coming from just a few years within a public school system, which is what it sounds like, and her moving into homeschooling? What do you think your biggest advice for her just beginning?
So I would suggest a period of unraveling. So a period of just that rest, discovering what the child loves, and discovering what, in separate from what the child was expected to love, because that's what the peers at the desk around them were experiencing. And so really getting to know your kid, really deepening the communication. So doing some bonding exercises, even if that's something as simple as, you know, going for a walk and looking for fairies under mushrooms, you know, I mean, it just something, something that is super neutral, not like, well, I have six questions I'm going to answer while I'm walking. Just enjoy time together.
Organic flowing conversation and connection.
Exactly. Yeah. And see where that goes. And then in the meantime, you can also be kind of exploring different schooling philosophies, you know, see if there's something that is intriguing, see if there's an element from one thing, an element, you know, kind of the families I have seen throughout the years have the greatest success defined by happy, healthy, thriving, beautiful children are the ones who are eclectic, the ones who are, you know, and I've seen academic success in families, like crazy academic success, but that piece of my child is their own independent person and has their own independent thoughts and is a positive, you know, one, you know, a person who's able to contribute positively to society. That's something that comes from allowing the child to be, you know, recognizing the heart patterns in the child. And circle time. I love circle time. Just having that centering each morning. I still do. I do it by myself or, you know, with my dog. just that centering in the morning of expressing gratitude and the metta prayer and offering, you know, peace and healing and happiness out to the world. And just there's something about starting a day in that way that enables the rest of the day to kind of fall beautifully and magically afterwards. I still have crazy stressful days, but absolutely. And so if you're used to getting up, getting ready, getting out the door to the school, maybe just starting with that morning, you know, that morning rhythm, establishing something that is peaceful and and starting from the heart there.
I love that. Allowing yourself to kind of relish in that slow for maybe the first time ever. Okay. So what's your advice on educating multiple ages? Cause that's another one that is coming in. And let's weave in, how do you deal with fights with kids? So multiple ages and the bickering.
We definitely, I'm going to address the bickering first. So the bickering definitely happens. So mine are, there's an 8.5, almost 9 year gap between my youngest and oldest. And so there was a lot of, you know, definite bickering. And when they would have their issues, love was first and foremost the most important thing in our household, and that was always stressed. And so if they would argue or bicker, I would make them hold hands and look each other in the eye and say, in this house we do not hurt, we only love. And when they were little, it was beautiful and it was precious and they would like dissolve in hugs and it was so sweet and it was wonderful. But as they got older, they would like squeeze each other's hands, you know, they're like, in this house. And but then, so if it was really something that needed to be addressed, then they needed to go and expend their energy, go do something physical, go do something physical and then come back when you can be nice to each other, kind of a approach. There was also a lot of pairing up my oldest and the youngest. I said I'd bookend kids and my middle babies. And so the bookend ones would spend a lot of time together. The middle ones would spend a lot of time together. And so breaking up dynamics made a big difference. And then when they were all four together doing something, it was either parent led so that everything was kind of, you know, overseen, or it was chaos, if I'm being honest. honestly, the kids, I mean, they did a lot of things. My oldest, in true nature, ran the show. You know, when the four of them were doing things, she would like to write plays. And so she would put together skits and things, and they would all fall in line when they were younger. As they got older, it wasn't always as easy, but they changed dynamics as they got older. The older two became closer because they were kind of doing things together a lot more frequently. And so it, I would say that changing out dynamics was key for me with my kids, instead of always saying, you two are together, you three are together, all four of you together. It was a changing out, keeping things fresh.
So you think the Montessori approach helped with
the bickering
and balancing of ages?
Yeah. And so I was able to work individually with the kids while siblings were working together. So like if my oldest is working with the youngest to do a project or something, that was helpful for her, because now I gave her teaching credit her senior year.
Oh, okay.
And so I gave her teaching credit on her transcript because she worked with my youngest and helped to do that. And then I was able to give individual time to each of them, but I really tried to keep them together. So if we were doing, for instance, history and science and literature, those were really easy to teach to the group.
Yeah.
And then they had their individual assignments that they would work on. Mm-hmm. And because I loved reading out loud to the kids, that was super easy. So I could read to them. We could have Socratic discussions. We could, you know, have all these wonderful things. And that was great because the older ones would encourage the younger ones to respond with questions. And so that's how I did it. And I loved that. As they got older, and they were the older ones were in high school, and then I had the younger ones, it felt like a struggle for a bit, more because I was having to let go and let the older ones do more independent work. Mm-hmm. And I was, so like, again, that was me. I was trying to corral them back. Come do circle time with us.
Yeah.
Come do afternoon reading, you know?
Yeah.
And so they would make guest appearances and things like that. But, and then we would have specific group activities that we continued. And because schooling wasn't 8 to 3, mm-hmm. it was all day. So there were, you know, there were definite times when we were doing things, but if we wanted to talk about what we had read in in history, then we sat at dinner and we talked about it. And
right.
so it was, lessons were, you know, we wove everything in throughout the day, weekends, mm-hmm. anytime it was opportunity, we just kind of made adjustments with each kid and each situation. Mm-hmm. Nothing was, I can't say that this is what we did every single time.
Yeah. I think that's
always changed.
Yeah. That's a lot of the response to these questions that we have to homeschooling, is there's not just one, because every single time it happens, I feel like there's a different remedy to it on a different day. Like when bickering in our house starts to surface and get a little intense, that's my signaling that we need to just drop it all and change the scenery. We usually mm-hmm. go outside. If we get to it in the afternoon, great. If not, I'm on to the next day. Mm-hmm. Like the older ones will usually, Ava will take it to soccer practice while she's waiting for the other sibling to finish up if she wants to get it done. A lot of these are the same thing, like the intention that's needed when it comes to schooling and how you get schooling and housework done. I feel like it's just,
I will say my house was cleaner when I had all of my kids at home.
Yeah.
Because than it is now. Because we Monday we did a house blessing. And mm-hmm. so every Monday we got that, you know, that was what we did. We did our, you know, and so everyone tackled different areas of the house. My baseboards were dusted, you know. And all of these things happened every Monday. It was this beautiful thing that we did. And then every day the kids rotated different chores and things got done. You know, they were done like I said, my house was cleaner when the kids were all here than it is now because
that's a really
they were
good
done
point.
regularly.
Yeah,
Yep.
just
And
weaving
it
it
was just,
into the rhythm of your day and
yep.
making,
It was
those
totally
little
just
tasks.
part of the morning. And it wasn't just every morning these things got done. It was throughout the day and rhythm. Everything happened. So in the morning they woke up, there were certain things that happened. And then in the afternoon, certain things happened. In the evening, certain things happened. And it wasn't like 8 a.m., noon, 6 p.m. It was just one thing followed something else. And so, we wake up, these are the things we do. And, after teeth were brushed, the sink got wiped down, kind of a thing. Like things were anchored to something that they were doing anyhow. And so, like introducing healthy habits, you were just things became anchored to something that they were already doing.
Yeah, I
And
love
that was.
that word anchored because that's exactly what a rhythm offers a household is. It's an anchor to the day for sure. Oh, okay, let's talk about this one. How to should you even homeschool if you feel like you aren't smart enough to educate your kids? I don't think this is one that is really spoke to very often, but I think it's one that comes up for a lot of mothers. I know it was for me. I mean, and so all throughout my public school experience, I carried the label of not very smart or needed more time. Or I mean, I remember my kindergarten teacher used to take my pencil out of my left hand and put it in my right, and then I would write my letters backwards because I was trying to write with my right hand. And so that's where the testing came involved, and that's where the labeling came involved. So I definitely carried the story of like, there's no way I can teach. Like math, I still do that. Like I'm math, any numbers to me, I'm like, ah, I can't teach that. So I'm glad that this mama asked this because I think it is a very tender question that we carry a little bit of embarrassment, so maybe we don't ask as often, but there's many of us who would like to hear a response around that.
It's a beautiful question, and I think that it's wonderful that mamas are feel vulnerable enough to be able to ask that question. I asked that question, my dad, like I said, taught elementary school for 1,000 years, and I asked him. I said, "What do you do?" I mean, growing up, I assumed he just knew everything. He was a teacher, therefore he knew everything, and he was the one I could go to if I had any questions about anything throughout all of my schooling, throughout all of my life. If there was a, an academic-based question, I'll ask my dad. And I asked him one day, I said, "How do you know everything? What do you do?" And he said, I don't. I just know where to look. I know how to find the answer." And that was so empowering
Yes,
because
if I could pick like a slogan for our homeschool, it'd be, I don't know, let's learn together.
yes, and that was that, and that's, and so anyone who feels that the calling in their heart that they want to provide education for their children, that's, you love your child feels loved and safe around you, you can make it work. Because especially now with the internet, there's so many resources, and if you it becomes a project, like you said, it
Right.
becomes
It's
an
an invitation.
activity.
It does.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And it deepens your relationship with your child, and it's magical when you are able to let your child see that you don't know everything,
Well,
and that,
yeah, because it gives them the freedom
oh
and
my
comfort to be
gosh,
able to share that I don't know this.
it,
The
yes, it gives,
permission to not
yes,
know.
that's
Yes,
it, that's it.
absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. It is, I honestly think that that is the best approach to be able to, instead of appearing that you know everything, because then that's not healthy for anybody. If that was addressed at all, or brought up at all, the question of standardized testing or things like that, or testing at all, that was a question that I would get asked from family and such. How do you know your kids are doing okay? And that I occasionally would get the standardized testing to be able to do with the kids at home, but not to turn them in, just for my own to have in that portfolio in case somebody knocked on the door. And we did them orally, or we talked about the different things. I definitely, you know, they knew how to fill in their bubbles because at some point in time they were going to have to learn how to fill in, you know, this the Scantron thing. But that was more the lesson that they learned, was how to fill in the bubbles, not the content of the test itself, like life skills.
Yeah.
Definitely teaching them different life skills that they would need, how to fill out forms, how to, you know, how to do those basic things that not that they're necessarily taught in public school, but that they would have to do throughout life. But we would do just, like I said, Socratic conversation, just asking questions and being answered with questions and back and forth, and then using the standardized testing to kind of provide an opportunity to, it did provide me with the opportunity to kind of write notes of, okay, this is an area that maybe I need to come back to.
Absolutely.
You know? So that helped me in my planning, but
they're not being graded or judged by what comes back on the test. Almost 15-year-old and almost 13-year-old actually asked if they could take it this year before we start the end of this month. Because they're curious. They just want to know kind of where they are based on the test. And I'm completely open to that, because that's all that's going to give us is information on, okay, well, what do we want to do with the information that comes back? Do you want to practice more on this area? And it's just, I have no issues with that at all.
Yeah.
Because it's, the judgment isn't there. Like,
Right. And we would also do with tests, any time like that. If they answered something incorrectly, it wasn't, well, this is wrong, and you know, moving on. It was, okay, well, how did you come up with that answer? And let's figure out what the answer is, and, you know, let's figure that out together.
Because a lot of the time when we are able to, as to be able to sit and listen to the child explain how they got to that answer, usually the concept is there, like they the understanding is there. It was just like they just needed a little tweaking, or they needed help to be able to communicate, like verbalize the understanding. You know, it's not that they were wrong or didn't know. What do you think is the biggest sabotage when it comes to homeschooling?
People assuming that you are home all day and therefore you can do things for them. So inability to have,
so taking
have
on
boundaries.
Too much.
Inability to
oh,
have boundaries.
Good.
Like, I would definitely say setting strong boundaries instead of like, oh, well, Heather's home, so she can watch my kids today, or Heather's home, she can run this, whatever. You know, there's that assumption that, oh, Heather, so I can call and talk this out today. And there's the assumption that if I'm home,
you're not
I'm
busy.
Just home. right.
So
for me,
that's a good one,
being able to establish strong boundaries and say, you know, I love you, but I need to be able to, you know, this is a window of time that I'm dedicated to spending with the kids right now.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'd say I love the boundaries one. I think the boundaries and then the comparison that we spoke to are probably, that's another big sabotage.
A lot of inner work definitely was done over the years. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I have moments, I'll talk to my husband and I'll say, gosh, you know, could you imagine if we were the parents of like today, if who we are today were the parents kids from day one. But, you know, of course there's that whole, they wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't have learned what we did, and the experiences were tremendous, and we grew with the kids.
Yeah.
And
Kaylee actually brought that up. She said a couple of years ago, isn't it wild that my younger siblings won't ever know or be mothered in the same way that I was mothered. And not in a bad or good way or better or worse way, but just recognizing how we evolve as mothers and humans, that it was like, wow, that's really interesting to sit with. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day a lot longer than
my gosh. Are you kidding? I'm not homeschooling anymore, so this is fine.
I'm paying my 15-year-old. Ava's all about it. She's charging me $10 an hour. So she's like, take all the time you need.
Good for her.
Where listeners can find you on Instagram and maybe an email, and share a little bit about your current offerings and what you're doing on the other side of momming littles.
Absolutely. Now that I am no longer actively mothering young children, I am doing some birth work, but mostly it's perinatal emotional wellness, doing a lot of support, inner child healing, that type of holding space, birth debriefing, things like that nature, of that nature, as well as providing virtual and in-person doula support as well. At Time for Baby is my website, and also on Instagram. So Heather at Time for Baby. And then my personal everyday kind of glimpse into my life is Greens and Tea. That's always been, you know, kind of where I hang.
Yeah.
And that kind of is who I am as a person. And then Time for Baby is evolving.
Yeah, it's growing. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful page. I'll put all of this in the show notes so people can click over and take a peek. But thank you again for hanging with us and sharing.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.